Every single person can do that. Because here's the thing. When you move out of that duplex, if you don't want to have nothing to do with real estate, hire property management. Just collect your money every month. It is what it is.
You are listening to The Millionaire Talk Show with Charles Oglesby.
We're going to be millionaires.
And we're interviewing proven millionaires who've built their wealth in real estate, sales, marketing, branding, and other areas by betting on themselves. And now, here's your host, Charles Oglesby.
This is The Millionaire Talk Show. My name is Charles Oglesby, also known as Tide Millionaire, founder and director of the Tide Capital Investment Club, Tide Capital Options Community, and so many other cool things that we have going on. Thank you guys all for tuning in. You know, the purpose of this story is, or this show, is to share the stories of successful African-American business owners and investors. And today we have a brother who is a combination of both. He has a ton of value to share with the audience outside of like his main, I wouldn't even say it's his main thing. I don't know if it's his main thing. He got a few things going on. Everything is wealth oriented, it seems like. So the Wealthy G, you guys have seen him on Instagram. You've seen him on Twitter, dropping gems, getting those posted or liked and reshared and turned into memes. So welcome to the show, man.
Hey, I appreciate you having me, man. It's great to be here.
So the first question I always ask people is, who are you and where are you from?
Yeah. So my name is George Waters, originally from Sicklerville, New Jersey. I come from a real estate background. I always say my background is very different from other folks, right? My parents are actually, they've been business owners my entire life. I've never seen any of my parents work a job ever. So that can be both good and bad, right? Because we know in entrepreneurship, there's good times and there's bad times, especially when you're first starting out. And my parents were first generation, getting it out of the mud. My father owns, you know, a blue collar company. He is a government contractor, right? So he was out there doing the work and hustling. So I got to see them be their own boss, but I also saw the negatives of that, right? So while they were running their business, they also stumbled upon real estate, old school, like with an infomercial, right? They stumbled upon real estate and then they started acquiring rentals early in my life as well. So that was just, those two things were kind of groomed into my life as I was being raised. And man, it was a crazy ride. And it actually, to fast forward to where I'm at now, I was fascinated with the 9-to-5. When I tell you, everybody is, listen, you know how everybody is so fascinated with entrepreneurship? Yeah. I literally, growing up, I'm like, I wonder what it would be like to not take what you do home with you every day, right? Like that's the other side that we don't talk about a lot. And I was raised in that, over dinner, talking about the business and stuff like that. And that can be a lot. So that was why I decided to, I ended up going the corporate route. I studied finance and business management to learn about the equities market, right? I was raised in real estate. What I noticed growing up is a lot of the old school real estate investors that my parents were hanging out with at these REITs and things like that. Something I always noticed is the real estate people, they weren't vested in stocks, right? Like they didn't have that stock mindset. And then the stock people that I would see, they didn't necessarily have that real estate mindset. And of course, this is back when I was younger, before the social media has kind of blended everything, but I saw that. So that was why I decided to study finance in college, go that corporate route to, you know, being where I'm at now, working at, you know, a large firm, being a financial advisor, while also growing multiple businesses in the process as well.
How old are you, man?
I'm 27.
Wow, not even 30 yet, and already out there on your second house. How many rental cars is it right now?
Nine.
Oh, nine rental cars. How did you get that mindset to actually start? I mean, your family, of course, but to me, it seems like there's a level of confidence that has to come before you can start embarking on those things. And some people don't get that confidence until they're 30, but you're already there pre-30. Where did you get that from?
Honestly, a lot of the things that, you know, we should be doing right now as far as personal development goes, I was forced to do that young, right? So I always tell people, like the old seminars that people used to go to get educated, like, you know, now we can, you know, have a digital product, but before you had to go and you had to be in the room at the hotel or whatever, right? And you had to go and get in those rooms. My parents were in the process of developing themselves while I was being raised. And it was just me. My siblings were grown out of the house, so it was just me. So they said, hey, you don't really have a choice. You're coming with us to these developmental endeavors. So kind of going to those, I would say for me, I didn't necessarily enjoy it growing up, right? I'm like, yo, I'm just trying to hang out with my friends and do all this. But, you know, in the subconscious, right, you still get those things. And then I was able to actually see those come out later in life, right? Like I would say in high school, right? I would be talking to my teachers and they're teaching me geometry or something like that. And I used to be like, you know, you can just go buy a rental property and like that can generate some cash flow for you, right? Like, so I kind of always just had that mindset where kind of just had to put together a plan to execute on it. But I've always seen that there is a clear path to wealth. And I've been confident that, you know, regardless of what I do, I know that I can walk that path.
Yeah. One of the things that you said earlier is you saw the downside of entrepreneurship. And so I think a part of the whole glamorizing entrepreneurship and bashing the 9-to-5 culture that I've helped create is we don't talk about the negative aspect of entrepreneurship. So what were those things that you saw growing up?
Yeah, man. So like I said, my parents, they ran a blue collar company, right? Like my dad was the head mechanic for his company for very long. So I saw the hours that it takes away. You know, there's not that a lot of the 9-to-5, you know, they gloat about the work-life balance. That doesn't exist in entrepreneurship, right? And if you're first generation or kind of just figuring it out and you don't have anyone to show you, there's a lot of headaches that go along with, you know, walking that path. So, you know, for me, I see that, right? I see where it's like, okay, we didn't get everything done, you know, during the day. So while we're talking about dinner, we need to finish out these spreadsheets, right? Or talking, you know, going more into business, right? As you're starting a business, there was poor cash flow management, right? So the business didn't do well this month. We got to change some things about our life, you know, for this month until we can bounce back. Or, you know, to the extremes of electric might be cut. Like real life things happen. Just because you own a business, there's still real life things that happen. And, you know, understanding that, you know, we don't necessarily see that side, but it's real. It's a real side of this thing.
Yeah. So as a financial advisor, that's kind of a 9-to-5, but it's also kind of like a hybrid where you have to bring your own clientele. You eat what you kill. It's commission based for the most part, right?
Not me. No. So really, it's completely salary based. So
really,
You know, and that's why I say my journey out of school. I started this right out of school, became a licensed stockbroker, and then up into a financial advisor. But I worked at like literally like one of the biggest mutual fund companies in America. Right. So that structure is completely different. For me, my role as a financial advisor is still completely salary. Granted, it's corporate. It's a nice salary. Right. But there isn't the aspect of going out and having to bring your own clients that a lot of, you know, financial institutions, because it's such a big institution, clients are just fed through this pipeline. But that is actually something that really, really, I always knew that I would be going into entrepreneurship and going into investing. But this actual role that I have in corporate America right now has propelled my confidence in the entrepreneurship space tenfold. Because what do I do every day but close clients, right? Literally every single day. Now, granted, I don't get the rush of getting the actual check from closing those clients. I get a salary, but I'm confident every single day in and day out, I am closing clients, right? And, you know, working in the corporate world, you see yourself like, you start doing the math. I've brought on, you know, this many million this month, but I'm still getting paid this same salary, you know? Yeah. So that's really what it's like for me in that corporate space.
And that's interesting, because I was going to ask you, like, what motivates you to even go into entrepreneurship? You have a good job, you have a good salary, you enjoy your 9-to-5, but you're heavy. 9 cars is heavy, man. Like what you guys are doing with the courses and all that stuff is heavy. What pushes you?
Freedom. That's always, so here's the thing. When I say that I was so obsessed with the role of a 9-to-5. However, that was never my end goal, right? For me, I always saw this business. It's so hard. You just get a 9-to-5. The end goal was still, I'm going to get a good 9-to-5 and I'm going to just invest in real estate. And that's how I'm going to get my freedom. Right. And then of course you get into the 9-to-5. I get into it 2 years in and I'm like, talking to these people every single day, asking them to take time off. When I came into the corporate world, I had a 6-year plan to get in out of school, do what I needed to do, make my investments and get out and be out on my own. I'm in year 5 of that. Well, I'm going into year 5 next year, will be 5 years going into that plan. But really, it's the freedom aspect, right? Being able to not have to ask somebody for permission for your time, right? Like, just that, nothing can actually match that freedom. So I just go into the 9-to-5 with the mindset of it's a tool for me, right? It's a tool that I leverage to literally buy back my freedom.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've seen you mention is your marriage. And it seems like it's really important to you. How has your marriage benefited your life? So that's like a crazy question, because a lot of times people don't think marriage is a win. They're like, oh, I got to be strapped down to one woman. And they talk about all the negatives. Mm-hmm. But like, I like to talk about the positives of marriage on this show.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, it's funny, because like, once you're married, it's kind of like obvious, right? But it's like, would you rather be doing something alone, or would you rather have somebody on your team, right? It really comes down to that. When you're married, when you have a family, would you rather be doing this on your own, or would you rather be having someone who you know in every way, shape, or form is on your team? All of your interests are aligned. Like, there's no better partnership, no matter how tight the contract is, no matter what, there's no better actual partnership than marriage. So I think that's been able to really propel me, is having someone that has my back, right? Has my back no matter what. I don't got to question anything. And, you know, we kind of build off of each other. And I think the other thing that people, again, it's obvious, but having two incomes in the house makes things a lot easier, a lot quicker, especially when, you know, you have the wherewithal that you know what to do with the, you know, extra funds, right? You're not just tricking it off. You're not just increasing your lifestyle, but you're actually strategically taking those two incomes for what they are and using them to build the life that you want. It's literally like a life hack.
Yeah, absolutely. So you and your wife bought a duplex for your first house. Did you have to convince her to buy the duplex, or was she just all for it?
Oh man. So luckily she was all for it, because since she met me, I've been talking to this real estate bug even before we had any properties, anything like that. And before we bought our personal duplex, I bought my own rental property in the business name. And I got that completely free using the Burr method, right? Mm-hmm. So I completed the Burr method. I went out on a limb. I maxed out my credit cards, right? I bought this house in cash. We fixed it up. And then, you know, of course, we fixed it up, rented it out, right? And then we were able to refinance it. All the money that we bought the house with, all the money that we had to spend to fix it up, we got all of that money back on the refinance, of course, right? And like I said, I used credit cards. So I had to pay off all my credit cards back and start back where I was. But at the end of that process, I got all my money back. And we still have that property to this day. After saving for CapEx, after saving for repairs, it's still making $700 every single month, right? That was my first like delve into this. And my wife was there. I'm talking it and I'm like, all right, look, I'm going to do this. You're going to be here with me. You're going to see how powerful this is. And after, you know, we saw that process happen, she was sold. And
Yo, it's the Options Trading Workshop, presented by Tide Capital. Learn the fundamentals and advanced trading strategies that allow us the chance to earn $20,000 in side money in 1 year while working a job and running multiple businesses. That's right. Learn the what, the where, and the how of options trading in this exclusive webinar. To find out more details, hit us up on the link in the bio, on Instagram at Partner with Millie, or on Instagram at Todd.Capital, or just head over to gumroad.com/Todd Capital.
You know, when
you know what? It's something about seeing that it's real that makes people buy into the idea of doing it.
Yep, exactly. And she was sold on it. Now, don't get me wrong. When it comes to the duplex idea, of course, she knew that it was smart financially. And I had to make sure from the beginning that I led with, hey, it's also temporary, right? It's going to be a stepping stone to get us to where we ultimately want to be. But when we get to where we want to be, we're going to be in such a better financial position because we took this 1 to 2 year, you know, step in between.
And that's exactly what you guys did, because you then pivoted or launched on top of the duplex. Which is interesting, because a lot of people would just skip the duplex phase, which means you're kind of leaving money on the table, because by you guys going to the duplex, when you could have just gone to the house, now you have an asset that helps you pay for the house.
Listen, exactly. And it's such an overlooked thing, right? Everybody wants what do they call it? The quote unquote American dream, right? But it's such an overlooked thing that if you simply utilize the FHA, right, you get that 2-to-4 unit building first, right? I think that should be everybody's first move, is getting 2-to-4 unit building with that FHA loan, right? Because it has so many different effects to it, right? First and foremost, you're going to now have someone renting out and covering your living expense when you move into one of the units, right? Whether you have one unit, whether you have three other units, they are now able to cover either all or most of the mortgage, right? Like I always tell people, my duplex was not a home run in any sense. It was a single, but it worked, right? Like it worked. It did what it needed to do, right? Because when we moved into it, our living expense was completely, you know, gone. And we were living in a luxury apartment paying $1,500 a month here in Philly. Right. So now for the year that we were living in that property, that $1,500 a month, well, we had to, our tenant was paying 12, right? And our mortgage was 14. So we were paying we went from paying $1,500 to now paying $200. Right. So that literally instantly gave us $1,300 in extra cash that we have every single month. Right. Now here's where it gets really easy, right? Once you have that extra $1,300 every single month, chill. Don't change your lifestyle. You don't have to do anything with that $1,300. For us, we knew that we were going to literally, for those months, save that $1,300 every single month, right? In a year and a half, that's the down payment to your next property. You don't even have to save. That's the money right there. If you stay exactly the same, that's the money for the next property right there, right? Now you go into that next property. For us, it was the, you know, a nice single family house. We got a yard for the daughter. We got a dog coming for Christmas and stuff. Like now we're in that position. But here's the thing. This four bedroom, three bath house that we have now, we put somebody in the unit that we used to live in. And now that property is giving us, and the unit that we live in, we rented that out for $1,400 a month, right? So that unit itself completely covers that mortgage. And then upstairs, that $1,200, now we're able to leverage that cash flow. Of course, putting some money aside for reserves, but we're able to now leverage that cash flow. It pays almost half of the mortgage on this house, right? So we're still in a position of, we have the item that we wanted to get as the end goal, right? We have a comfortable property, but we sacrificed for that year. And now we have something that is paying for half of that property forever, right?
It's like, if you jump immediately to your goals can kind of become a burden, because a lot of folks, they hop in these homes and you're like, they say, just because you're qualified doesn't mean you can afford it. Well, now you can afford it and you're qualified for it. And all you had to do was put some assets in the middle of between you and your dream. Dang, put some assets between you and your dream.
It's the formula. Everybody can do that. Literally every single person. It doesn't matter if you want to be a real estate investor or not. Every single person can do that. Because here's the thing. When you move out of that duplex, if you don't want to have nothing to do with real estate, hire property management. Just collect your money every month. It is what it is, right? No judgment. You can do that. But this is just an integral part. We all are involved in real estate, whether we want to be or not, because we all need somewhere to live, right? At the end of the day. So you might as well leverage this opportunity to be able to, you know, build your long-term wealth while providing shelter for yourself.
Yeah. It's interesting because when you tell the story, it's just like, okay, he bought a house. But when you share it on your Instagram, it's like, bro, like we really did this. Because sometimes what we're aiming for can seem like we can't achieve it just yet. So when you do achieve it, you're like, man, like, so it's like, we don't want people who are listening to that to just kind of gloss over like, okay, he bought a duplex, rented it. Like, no, like that is powerful, man. A lot of people aren't doing that. They're grinding. They're trying to get affordable housing bills passed. They can't afford to buy anything. Well, you just follow this path, get some assets and make some sacrifices, buy something that you don't want to live in, but you want to own. And now you can live your dream. So that's dope.
Yeah, it definitely should not be overlooked, man. This was like a life goal of mine, having the real estate background. I always was like, I just want to buy a duplex, live for free, and be able to leverage my life off of that. Right. We talk so much on social media about, hey, have a income stream that can cover, you know, your living expenses, right? Whether it be the properties, the business, whatever it is, have income streams that can cover an expense. Why not use a house to pay for your house, right? We want to get away from depending on our 9-to-5s. We have to utilize the 9-to-5s to build the dependency off of us. Because one last thing, when we're qualifying for these mortgages and things like that, what they do want to see is that income, right? That W-2 income. So that was another thing. We have to be strategic and make these moves early, because if we are going into full-time entrepreneurship, your first year, you might not have that W-2 income. You might not have done your taxes right. You might not have paid yourself, and then you can't even qualify for a mortgage. So for me, it was like, time is of the essence to make these moves while I am at the 9-to-5. I need to get as many of these low down payment mortgages as possible and leverage that W-2 income.
Yeah. So what's the next real estate goal for you?
So I am in the middle of a flip right now. I am flipping a four bedroom. It's going to be four bedroom, two and a half baths when it's all done. Funny story about that. I'm not a flipper at all. But I'm delving into that. That property was actually supposed to be a BRRRR as well, where we were going to do a multifamily conversion, right? Buy it and then cut it into two units because it's a big building. But there were some politics with the with the local politics. Basically, zoning isn't going to allow for it. So we had to, of course, then make the decision to flip it, exit out of it, and go ahead and get back to it. But with that property as well, one of the things that I'm big on is that property. I bought it completely with business credit. I didn't use any of my own money. I still haven't used any of my own money. That's what I'm doing with that. And ultimately how I'm going to be growing my real estate business, right? Cause I have, of course the properties that I buy in the personal, but also I have a real estate business that is strictly, an acquisitions business. That's me and my father, where we are literally building a real estate portfolio. It's for the last name. And that's something that we're able to just continue to build ourselves. So that business now has like 300,000 in business credit. So now we're free to make these moves. We just bought that house, $95,000 in cash, using the business lines of credit to fix it up and just continue to grow it that way strategically.
So business, I was going to ask you if you're talking business lines of credit, business loans, business credit cards, or a combination of all of them.
Yeah. So I personally prefer business lines of credit because they're so much more easier to maneuver. And of course, when it comes to the loans, especially with real estate, it can take months to actually need the money for, what you're taking it out for. So I prefer business lines of credit. But of course your business has to be at least 2 years old, to get those business lines of credit, right? We have to, realize when it comes to these banks, they have underwriting guidelines. Once you know the underwriting guidelines, you can get the bag for your business. Right. So if your business is less than 2 years old, I would absolutely say to go ahead and, get those business credit cards because there's liquidation methods to be able to get the funds off of the credit card. They have these 0% in intro APRs that you can utilize. So you can use the credit cards, but you have to get a little bit more creative. Whereas with the business line, of credit, it's as simple as going on the app, right? Going on the app and moving the money from the line of credit to my checking account, and then I just write a check. That's really the power of it, right? I have $25,000 business lines of credit. I can just write a check and buy a house whenever I feel like it. That's really the power of business.
That's dope.
Right? it's super, super powerful. And we see a lot of talk on the internet. Some people are using it for, I would say, less than good purposes, right? They're promoting getting it with bad credit. I'm not one of those people. I'm more so someone who I understand how powerful this tool can be if leveraged correctly, right? Just kind of talking about business credit in general, not even related to real estate. Think about people who have clothing lines who need to get their inventory. They need to get a big order of their inventory up, right? Being able to leverage credit and being able to get funding for your business to actually strategically grow it. And of course, you buy the stuff, you sell the stuff, and then you pay it back, right? But then there's always that profit margin where your business is perpetually growing during that process, right? That's how we can strategically leverage credit in really any business, any lane that we're going in. Think about the actual digital space, right? Leveraging my American Express Gold card. Listen, I use that to purchase ads, right? To get in front of more people. That American Express Business Gold card gets 4x points on the ad spend, right? So one, I can literally spend money to get in front of more people, right? More people will purchase the products. The products are able to pay back the ad spend and then some, right? Because we know the overhead, it's basically non-existent at that point. And on top of that, I'm going to get these things called points for 4x, 4x. And I can use them to then travel or, do whatever it is that I please with those points. But the main thing is I just got them. I got all of this just for running my business, right? Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. I never even thought to use credit cards for ads, but it makes sense because at that point it's an investment. So you're going to get the money back, especially the way that Facebook does it or whoever you're using does it. A lot of times it's pay per click. So if you aren't getting clicked on, you aren't paying money. But if you are being clicked on, then you're likely getting money for that click. So then it's just like a It's just like overhead at that point. It's like a cost of goods sold.
Exactly. Why not run that through credit, right? You're not seeing it come from, you know, your reserves.
No, and
on the back end, yes, please load. specifically, I'm a huge fan of the American Express Business Gold Card, because that's the one that is going to give you 4x points on the categories that you actually spend the most in. Right. So that's the opportunity when people are talking about traveling for free, right? Getting these luxury travel hacks, getting upgraded to first class, right? Being able to leverage the point system. You don't have to do anything out of your everyday. It's just really putting in, oh, I'm going to load up this Amex and I'm going to use the Amex instead. And every month I'll just pay it off because I was going to use the money anyway. Right. Like, I might as well get some free stuff out of it.
Man, that makes too much sense. Wow. In terms of business credit, are there certain lenders that you like to go through, or do you just kind of go wherever the money is?
Yeah. So that's a great question, right? So for me personally, when it comes to building the business credit, and when you are going to get those cash cards and those business lines of credit, from the beginning, it's always going to be the local mom and pop banks or the credit unions, right? It's going to be different depending on where you're located at in the country, of course. But like, for example, here in Philly, Pennsylvania, like we have PenFed, we've got KeyBank, we've got Fulton Bank, BB&T, they're now Truist. These are all smaller banks, regional banks, right? Regional banks and credit unions. Now, I like going to them because you can leverage something called relationship banking, right? They're not the huge conglomerates. You can actually go in there and you can create a relationship with these people, right? You can start your bank account, you can deposit some money. And when you have that relationship with them, they have way more lax underwriting guidelines than those large banks, right? They have those larger banks, those nationwide banks, they have standard lending and it's all over the country. It is what it is. If you hit it, you hit it. If not, better luck, right? So you can leverage the relationship banks with these smaller, regional banks and these credit unions. And also, it's really a formula, man. I just want to explain that it's really a formula of, especially when you're first starting out, the data points, right? Like, so many people talk about building business credit and the what do they say, the no PG. Like, I'm trying to get something no PG, right? Like, if you're building an actual business and you hit on the data points on your personal credit, you can get all the benefits of the no PG, right? With a PG, the only thing you don't get is, of course, here's the thing. I hate to burst so many people's bubble. Whether you PG or not, there is still recourse, right? There is still recourse either way if you decide to default on that lending, right? There's recourse either way. Now, if you PG, you can skip the waiting and skip all those hoops that they make you jump through to get it, you know, no PG, and these shady lenders that you have to go to with outrageous APRs and things like that. You can go the actual route, create that relationship, utilize a personal guarantee, right? Have your data points hitting for your personal credit report. You're still going to get the benefit of that credit card, that line of credit. It's still not going to show on your personal credit report. That is the biggest thing for me when it comes to business credit, right? I told you when I first started with the Burr property, I did that with straight personal credit cards. Because I didn't know.
So you probably jacked up your ratios and
killed it. I killed it. But here's the thing. It was a sacrifice that I was willing to make because I knew what the outcome was. If I pay it all back, I'll bounce back and be right back. I will never do that again now, understanding that we have this tool available to us that is business credit, right? Build your entity, right? Build your business, and then go ahead and actually secure the bag in the business name from the beginning.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you about that. What are those data points that you're referring to?
Yeah. So, first and foremost, when it comes to the personal credit report, you want to think a little bit further than just the score, right? So it's more so about the report. And if you have the correct things on your report, your score is going to reflect that, right? So first and foremost, the age of your credit report should be 4 years or older, the average age, right? And there's plenty of ways. If you're younger than that, you can add on trade lines and things like that to, you know, get your age to where it needs to be. Secondly is going to be inquiries. When it comes to applying for business credit, You really want to, they say below four. I tell everybody, try to be below two. Try to be below two inquiries. You can get inquiries off of your credit, right? Like there's guides out there. You can get inquiries off of your credit. But you want to have, you know, under four, closer to two inquiries. You definitely want to be below 30% on all of your credit cards. And if you can be, you really want to be at that 10% point. The 10% point is the sweet spot. You can get approved being at 30%, but 10%, you're going to up your likelihood of approval significantly. And another thing is the other cards that you have, right? What we have to think about, we have to always put ourselves in the lender's perspective. Would you lend somebody $20,000 if the most money they've ever been lended was $20?
Right.
I don't trust you with that amount, right? So another thing on your credit report is having, you know, specifically having already at least a $10,000-$12,000 credit card, which again, if you don't have one, a family member, right, get added as an authorized user and have that card still report and it looks just as if you did have it. But having something that already has a large limit on it is going to be crucial as well, because again, we're going through electronic underwriting and these systems are reading your report, looking for these specific data points and deciding how much they should actually approve you for, right? So those are just some main things as far as the report goes. And then also, I think everyone, when you're going for business credit, you should at least go through building your business foundation correctly, meaning doing what you need to do with the net 30 accounts, right? Building that business foundation to get yourself to an 80 paydex score. An 80 paydex score is good business credit, right? You can get to an 80 paydex score with five net 30 vendors, right? With five net 30 vendors, you can get to an 80 paydex score. And I say that just because what we've seen is even when you're utilizing a personal guarantee, that doesn't mean that they're not going to like check the business, like, you know, at least see what's going on with it. Right. So you need to have the business foundation set up. And then you also want to have, you know, your name needs to be correct. Your name isn't in a high risk industry. Your business address should not be your house. Right. They don't want to lend money to somebody who's doing business out of their garage. Look, even if you are doing business out of your garage, it's cool. Right. I'm in my basement right now. But like what we have to understand is you can get a virtual address and then you use that, right? Regis is a great company for this. You get a virtual address. Now, when those banks are looking up and putting in all of your business data, they see that corporate office, right? They don't see the house. They see the corporate office. Yes. It's all about especially being in the startup position, right? A lot of people are just getting started on their business credit journey or just getting started on their business journey in general, where you may need to utilize these virtual offices, utilize Grasshopper or Ring Central, because another thing you want to have is a 1-800 number. Super old school, but it's just the banks are, their systems are literally so old school, it's ridiculous.
Todd Consulting presents the Vending Machine Business Webinar. You can only have one job, but you can have as many vending machines as you want. This is your chance to see how we do business and how you can start your very own vending machine business. Avoid the mistakes we made and start winning. You'll be shown how we find, negotiate, buy, and manage our vending machine business generating thousands per month and how it has unlimited scale. To find out more details, hit us up on the link in the bio, on Instagram at PartnerWithMillie, or on Instagram at Todd.Capital, or just head over to gumroad.com/Todd Capital.
But having a 1-800 number, you know, we don't necessarily need it. And you don't necessarily need it for your business. Nobody really uses them anymore, but having it, you can get it $9.99 a month. Ring Central, Grasshopper, just making sure that your personal data points are hitting, you know, with the report, and then your business foundation is set up. Man, you can walk into banks, especially if they have the like express lending or no doc loans and things like that. You can walk into banks and you can secure a bag for your business. And when you know what to do with the bag, it's powerful, very powerful.
So before we get to the wrap up questions, I wanted to ask you what it's like doing business with your dad, because I always tell people that that's like a life hack where you have a father and a son combination. There's really nothing that you can't do. So how did you guys even approach the idea of doing business together?
Yeah. So it's funny, when I first started my business, it was myself, two friends. And then my dad saw what was happening and he wanted to get in on it. Right. Real quick, we started the business by saving $33 every single month. Right. It was kind of like saving up to make an investment, things like that. My dad saw in on that and he was like, I see see what you're doing. I mean, I know how I raised you. I know what we do. So I think this is going to be, you know, big. So I want to get in on this. So he started putting in his $33. He said, look, I'm going to be hands off. I don't want there to be tension between us. When you need me, let me know, but I'm going to be hands off and let you do your thing and provide guidance. And we kind of set that standard from the beginning. So it's kind of like, hey, listen, you know, he's got his real estate portfolio, right? He's kind of like, hey, you take the charge, but I want to make sure that I'm here to partner because he's not a dummy. He's not one to miss an opportunity, right? So he, you know, took that passive role and he really acts as, you know, an advisor, but also when it comes to having access to capital, right? Being able to, when I was doing that Burr property, and I got myself into all this credit card debt on the back end. And when it came to refinancing, I was like, my credit is shot. I can't actually qualify for a mortgage. I have a partner who has the liquid capital to be like, hey, I'm going to lend you the money for 1 month. Let your credit shoot back up, refinance. And then instead of paying the credit cards back, you can pay me back, right? So just being able to leverage, you know, that father-son connection. And, you know, I live in Philly, he lives in Jersey. So that also gives us meaning in our interactions. And on a day-to-day, you know, I have a reason to call my pops, keep in contact. And we're able to do something together that we both have a passion for. It's nothing like it, man. I wouldn't trade it for the world.
That's dope. I think more people deserve that because that is just the sky's the limit when you start making that pairing. I've seen it too many times, but usually it's not within the African American community that you see that. See it in like the Jewish community, the Asian community, everybody else but us, the white community. So It's cool to see that happen. And it's cool to see that it's possible to do it. Cause you know, sometimes we're like, oh, well, I don't do business with family or, oh, I can't do blah, blah, blah. And then people over here just like very competent and could be doing dope stuff together. But for some reason, they just written off the idea of doing business with their family and they could be, it's like, it makes everything easier.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really the same concept of you have to make sure that you vet your business partners properly. You know,
I've seen you say that before. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've said that before. Cause like I said, I started my business with two friends, right? Who I was like, hey guys, we can make money in real estate. We just need to save up our money. I got these plays that we can make. Right. And you know, bringing in people who necessarily were like, okay, that sounds good. But then when it comes time to put in the work, that ethic, that same ethic that I have isn't there. And, you know, you get disappointed and that can mess up friendships or, you know, in the family aspect, that can mess up family relationships. So I think it's a hack to go in, to be able to go into business with, you know, whether it be friends, whether it be family, but we have to make sure that we understand who we are dealing with, right? Just because somebody is family doesn't make them a good business partner. But because of the fact that their family is an added benefit to having them as a business partner.
Right. How do you vet business partners?
Oh, man. At this point, right, we're in a different position than we were 2 years ago, right? We're in a very, very different position now. So at this point, you kind of have to already be there, right? When I first started, I was just like, hey, if you can walk and if you can lift 50 pounds, I got this idea. We can start a business. But, you know, now, like, for example, with my partner, with Ryan, Infamous CPA, you have to be able to complement each other, right? Where you have to be able to see that this person has X, Y, Z skill set. I might not be the strongest in that skill set, but we have, you know, these contrasting skills that are going to do well together. And then if you can have a good relationship with that person as well, it's a recipe for success, right? But you kind of have to understand that person, know their strengths and weaknesses, and not necessarily look for the person that's exactly the same as you, but somebody who is strong in the points that you may not be strong at. I think that's really the main thing when it comes to like vetting and picking who you're going to go into business with is just making sure it's a good fit all around.
And it helps to already see them out there crushing it because Brian's been crushing it for a while. That dude is a beast. He's not even 30 yet and he's impressing me every day.
Listen. that was the beautiful thing of that partnership is we connected online, right? I actually, back when Brian was first getting started in the car rental business, I booked the consultation with him. I was like, you're doing what? I heard on pie. I was like, you're doing what? Yeah, let me go ahead and let's go ahead and hop on the phone, bro. I could have said, hey, let me get on the phone and let me pick your brain. But listen, you got to value people's time, right? I said, listen, I need to hop on a consultation with you. I got what he was doing, was able to leverage, you know, the business credit aspect and kind of bring everything together with some automations. And, you know, I was able to turn up as well. And we're just, you know, info sharing with each other, like, yeah, we can do this, we can try that. And then it just came up like, what if we threw all of this together, like this, your system, my system together, we just literally created the perfect, the perfect system to get to six figures in this lane, right? We might as well do this together. Our relationship is already built. I know where you're strong at. I know where I'm strong at. There's a clear, you know, synergy there. Let's go ahead and run it.
Yeah. So when you guys came together, were you seeing better results than when you were just on your own?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, from content strategies, the launch strategy, just being able to bounce ideas off of two minds, not even just two minds, two sharp minds, right? Like someone who I look at and I don't think I'm smarter than you, right? Like I legitimately can talk to somebody and be like, you might be smarter than me. That's iron sharpening iron where, yeah, once we got together and the product speaks for itself, but being able to have two heads together on it, yeah, the results quadruple. Yeah,
right. And I'm glad you said quadruple because I always tell people that in business and in partnerships, it's not 1 + 1 = 2. So you guys didn't just merge your sales together. Like, no, like you came together and you exploded your sales further than if you would have stayed apart.
Exactly.
And that's why that partnership is important.
For sure. For sure.
I can't let you go without asking about financing a car in your business name. Yeah. I've seen you throw it on the timeline too many times. And so we got to get the details on how to do it.
Yes. So there's two different routes, right? You can go the route and you can try to get it no PG, right? You can build up your business credit and apply with your EIN. What we're able, you know, success loves speed, right? What you're able to do is you're able to leverage a personal guarantee. You can go to banks like Bank of America, like Navy Federal, Ally does this, Tesla does this, Ford does this.
Oh, Tesla does it.
Yes, Tesla Financial does this as well, right? What you do is the same thing I was talking about with the general business credit. You leverage the personal guarantee, right? You apply with the personal guarantee. The main thing with that is you want to make sure that you're applying as a third-party personal guarantor rather than a co-signer, right? Because if you're a co-signer, that loan is now, that's you and the business together. But if you're a third-party personal guarantor, that's your business is taking the loan, but you're the one responsible if the business defaults. That's the difference between it showing up on your credit report and it not being on your credit report.
It's the small details, man.
The smallest of details pay huge, huge dividends. Right. Like that's really it. You want to make sure you're a third party personal guarantor. Same thing. You know, you need to make sure. Yeah. But the data points, things like that, it's the same thing. Right. But that's how you can not jump through the hoops of building the business credit, but still get the vehicle in your business name, protect your personal credit and still run it up. And in our sense, people are able to get these cars in their business name, no money down. Right. And then they're able to use these cars, turn them into assets. And now they're making money off of these vehicles every single day that they didn't spend any money to get. And their debt to income ratio was still protected. They want to go buy a house. They want to go do whatever. It's as if they did not finance that car when someone put the personal credit report.
When you do this, are they they're looking at the income and the assets of that business?
So they're going to be looking at the income, right? Okay. And the very important thing, right? We've all applied for a vehicle or a credit card in our personal name, right? The very important thing to understand when you're going and applying for these, for anyone out there who has a brand new business, right, is you are not bringing your paperwork, all right? Just understand that and understand the power of what you are going to project to make, right? Like you utilizing projected income rather than saying, my business has zero.
Oh, that is so smart.
You know what I'm saying? Like we have to be able to just leverage these small opportunities in the system that we can tweak to be able to get what we want, right? Don't listen. If somebody tells me I want a car in my business name, my business has $0 in revenue, but I want this vehicle, I'm not going to check, right? But if you tell me you didn't make anything, okay, cool, right? But if you say, you know, if you utilize projected numbers and things like that, listen, you're filling out an application and what is on the application is what is going to be used to underwrite whether or not you're getting approved. If you have the credit, if you already have the credit to back it up and you're able to leverage, you know, that stated income or that, you know, projected income, that's the key to getting the approval. Yeah. Right. But you have
to
know.
You can use the income the car is going to generate to finance the car.
Exactly.
Just like any acquisition. If you're buying, I think that that's one of the mistakes that the community makes, and I make it all the time, is you look at an asset and you're like, man, can I afford the asset? And it's like, no, you can't afford the asset, but the asset can afford the asset. Yeah. So if you're looking at like a business acquisition that's kicking off $100,000 and your debt service is $20,000, like you can't afford $20,000 a month, but the asset can. And yep. So that's how you have to approach it based on the projections. That's dope.
Yep.
And that's dope.
Listen, we have to think about this just to kind of bring it full circle for people. When we were talking about how house hacking is a crazy key, when it comes to qualifying for that 2-4 unit property, we not only use the W-2 income from our job, but you can use 70% of the rental income that property is going to generate to qualify for it as well. These principles exist in different industries. We just have to bring them together, right? Like these principles are already there for us.
That's so true. That's so true, man.
It's powerful, man. It's powerful.
I had another rental, or not rental car, but credit question I was going to ask you. It'll come to me, but man, that's a lot of gems, a lot of insight right there, you guys. Make sure you guys take notes, get his course, all that really cool stuff. The last four questions I ask every guest, every episode are these. What's your favorite business or real estate book?
Yeah, so it's more so a really overall mindset finance. The Secrets of the Millionaire, of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker. That was a really, really powerful book for me. I talk about those conferences and things like that. My parents actually took me to the conference back in the day when he was going around and like hosting those seminars based around the book. So I got to not only read the book young, but also like see him teach those principles in the conference setting as well. And that really changed my financial mindset, the thought of being able to split my money, my thoughts about money, right? The power of my thoughts behind money. And just overall, a powerful thing that he discusses is the concept of keeping money in motion, right? Like just those are very powerful concepts that I've been able to use in both business in general and in real estate.
So what does wealth mean to you?
Oh, man. So wealth in its simplest form, exactly what I said in the beginning, it's freedom. It's freedom, right? Like wealth isn't a materialistic number. It's not a cash flow number. It's the ability to do what you want, when you want, with who you want, and for however long you want, right? Like that's really what it is to me. Simple freedom.
What sets apart successful entrepreneurs from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
Oh, man. Belief, right? Like we touched on it in the beginning, but one of the things that I always like try to bring back in my content and in my presence when I'm talking with people is there's really not a big difference between me and the everyday person. And I try to always, people, you know, they see you online and they get this bigger than life persona. But the real difference is I have believed in my mission for years, even before it worked. I believed in the mission, right? I believed in being able to build wealth through these strategic investments, being able to start these businesses. I believe in that system and it is going to work until it works. And I'm going to keep trying until it works. Right. I think that belief system is one, what crosses us over into getting started, but also what's going to allow us to continue to keep pushing forward when stuff gets tough and to always continue to go to that next level. It's that belief and that mindset.
I have a question. I don't know if it's relevant, but are your parents immigrants?
No, they're not. No. Yeah, it's not the first time I got that question, but no, my mom, she's an army brat. She was moving around in her childhood, and my dad's family's from Philly.
Wow.
They're both first generation. Like my family bloodline does not come from this. They were the ones that broke that cycle. So I think like when we talk about what everyone is doing and what we're talking about online with Black Wealth, for me, I'm kind of like a personification of like, hey, if everybody right buckles down and does this thing, your kids are gonna be good, right? Like your kids are going to be good because I was a straight knucklehead. That's the other thing. I was a straight growing up, I was like I said, I fought them on everything. I was a straight knucklehead and I still ended up with the knowledge, right? And I still ended up with the drive and I still ended up with the work ethic because I was in that environment. They put me in that environment regardless. right? So if we can all do that, understand that concept of our kids being around and our kids seeing us put in the work, the you know, how we build off of that from generation, whether we like it or not, whether our kids like it or not, it's what happens, right? Evolution is real. Like, but no, to answer the question, no, my parents aren't actually in my parents.
That's dope. That's dope. Man, I think that's my last question. Last question would be, where can they find you? Where can they follow you? And where can they support what you have going on?
Yeah, absolutely. So on Instagram, Twitter, the Wealthy G, G, just one letter, the letter G. When it comes to tapping in, we have resources. We have the car rental blueprint. We're helping people start, scale, and automate their business to six figures. This is a super, super powerful income stream. We also have the house hacking blueprint that is going to be coming in 2022. That is going to be another product, right? We're trying to put together my goal, everyone that I connect with, right? When we connect, my goal is to be able to take my experiences, because that's what people always want. How did you do this? How did you do that? Be able to take our experiences, break them down in the simplest format, and be able to give it to somebody else so that they can not only do what I did, but so that they can surpass what I did. So that's, you know, what I offer, and what people can do when they tap in with, for sure.
Oh, awesome, man. Dope conversation. Great interview. We'll have the links to everything in the show notes. Luckily, this one's going up on YouTube right now as we speak. So no extra steps for me. And we'll get the audio to you guys in about a week. But cool conversation. Definitely make sure you take notes when we talk about the business credit, the house hack, and just a lot of gems. The brother's not even 30. He's 27 and he's doing stuff that's just on a whole nother level. So I think that it just speaks to what's possible at any age. It speaks to what's possible in this era that we're living in right now, with access to the internet, access to people. This dude has a business partner that lives in Chicago and he lives in Philadelphia. I was like, that's crazy. They don't even live in the same city. They don't even work in the same building. So awesome stuff. We're going to go ahead and end it there. Make sure you guys leave us a rating and a review. I'm not saying a rating or review. I want a rating. I want a review. I want you to subscribe and I want you to share it. And if you do all those things, we're going to figure out a way to show some love back to you. Might be a t-shirt, might be a shout out on the podcast, something. But help us, we help you get this game to your friends and family. My name is Charles Oglesby, also known as Todd Millionaire, and we are signing off.
What's going on, podcast listeners? This is your man, Donald the Voice, the official editor and podcast producer. And listen, I just had to come in and tell you that we appreciate your listenership. And I want to give you a special offer for listening to this podcast. If you have voiceover, podcast, or video editing needs, let's talk. You can go over to donaldthevoice.com/contact, and I'll be happy to talk with you about what you need and how I can serve you. You want to sound good and look good so that people can feel good and do good as a result of listening or watching your content. And I'm here to help you make that happen. So let's talk. Go over to donaldthevoice.com/contact and we'll talk. Have a good rest of the day, evening, morning, whatever time it is. And I'll talk to you soon.